Now, in Heart and Soul, the second of two programs to mark the 800th anniversary of the birth of Jalaluddin Rumi, the Muslim Sufi poet from Persia. It's presented by Shusha Guppy.
Come to me, wanderers, worshippers, whoever you are, a Muslim or a Jew, a Christian, a fire worshipper, or an atheist, come to me. For me, Rumi's invitation sums up his life and work. As a child growing up in Iran, Rumi's poetry was part of our daily lives, sung, recited, and quoted all the time, to make a point or to clinch an argument. In last week's Heart and Soul program, we heard about Rumi's significance to Muslims. Many see him as a spiritual master who brings them closer to God and to the Prophet Muhammad. This week, on the BBC World Service, I'll be meeting some followers of Rumi who have adopted a more individual approach outside his traditional Islamic context.
Rumi's essential message, the message that keeps repeat over and over and over again, is that God is not found in the mosque, nor in the temple.
Shahram Shiva is born Jewish, but now calls himself a progressive spiritualist. He's made it his mission to bring Rumi to the West.
Rumi was very progressive. He was universal. He is one of our brightest creative talents. He is not known in the West as much as he deserves to, but he's on the same scale as Beethoven, Shakespeare, Mozart. Do you say Beethoven is a Christian composer, or do you call him a great composer? Rumi is not a Muslim, in my opinion, poet. Rumi is a great Persian poet who belongs to the world. And the most prominent message in his work is look inside yourself. He taps into elements that brings all of us together. And when people say he was devout Muslim, you know, that's actually questionable. I don't believe that. I look at his work and I see what I see. I think that people tend to project what they believe.
Living now in the United States, Shahram Shiva is an award-winning translator of Rumi's poetry. He also runs workshops where he sings and performs Rumi's work.
Lover me, cave me, the sweet burn of love me. Lover you, cave you.
Lover me is a cry for love.
So you.
It is a sharing of Rumi's unique form of yearning. Is to say, the universe, lover me, shower me with love.
Light you, celebration you.
I recite some of it in Persian. It's a very rhythmic poem of Rumi where he says, Yar maro, qar maro, ishq jigar khar maro, yar tui, qar tui, khawja nigahdar maro. The whole poem, just like that, just absolutely gorgeous, just washes over you. It is quite a mesmerizing effect that it doesn't matter whether you even understand the words, you have any education, you just love the words and you just want to repeat them.
Sugar you, poison you.
Shahram says that his typical audience consists of white Christian adults.
I think in America, in my own experience of having Rumi performances, workshops, lectures and so forth, is that organized religion is under fire, rightly so. And this is not just one religion, all religions. So people seek ways out. You know, they look for ways where they can still tap into a belief system that is not dogmatic or is not fear-based. Religions are basically fear-based. They use a carrot and a stick tactic. It's a form of control. Spirituality is not like that. And Rumi, in my opinion, he's not fear-based. Rumi is love-based. Rumi elevates you rather than puts you down. Rumi brings you up. He doesn't call you a sinner. He calls you this beautiful, loving person who has so much to grow and so much to blossom.
But Rumi hasn't always been so well known outside the Muslim world. When I was a singer in the 60s and 70s, and I had settled in England, very few in the West had heard of him. One of the first true devotees of Rumi I met was the singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen. And it was because of his wonderful song, Joan of Arc. It's about the 15th century French heroine, Joan of Arc, who was burnt at the stake. The song describes how Joan becomes the bride of the fire that is burning and consuming her in order to become totally united with him.
Then fire, make your body cold. I'm gonna give you mine to hold. Saying this, she climbed inside to be his one, to be his only bride.
When I heard this song, I was amazed at how close it was to Rumi's vision. Rumi says, if you're not willing to burn and lose yourself in love, do not embark on love's journey. For him, love is not for the faint-hearted or the self-obsessed. A few years later, I recorded the song Joan of Arc myself. Leonard Cohen heard it and contacted me for a meeting. We discussed Rumi's poetry and he told me he considered himself a devotee of the mystic poet. It was so long before Rumi became fashionable that I'm sure he meant it.
And then she clearly understood, if he was fire, then she must be wood.
I'm Shusha Gappi, and on this Heart and Soul for the BBC World Service, I'm looking at the poet Rumi, who was born 800 years ago, and his impact outside the traditional Islamic world he was born into. In the 1990s, Rumi's fame and popularity in the West exploded. That was when a free translation of Rumi's poems by the American poet Coleman Barks made him overnight a best-selling poet in the United States. Now, there are even plans to produce a $25 million film on Rumi in a joint venture between Italy and the United Arab Emirates. Dr. Leonard Lewison, who is a lecturer in Sufi literature at Exeter University in the UK, believes that Rumi appeals to so many outside his own faith because his poetry ravishes the heart.
He's using profane symbols. He's using wine, women, taverns. All of these are positive. They all have positive meanings, but they attract the profane consciousness. So basically, he's charming the hearts of the secular readers and converting them unconsciously to a religious sacred point of view by using this profane imagery. So he converts the listener and the reader the way a work of art converts. You look at a Michelangelo and you know that's beautiful. So it's not rational. And the other thing is, this poetry is not dry, ascetic, mystical poetry. He's using immoral stories to make mystical points of view. He tells a story, for instance, of the king's fool who decided to marry a prostitute. And the king said, "Why did you do that? I could have found you a perfectly good, very pious, good woman to marry. Why did you marry a prostitute?" And he said, "Well, I had eight of those women and I divorced them all. They all turned out to be whores. So I decided to marry a prostitute." And the idea here, this would seem just like a bawdy joke, but it isn't. The spiritual point is that you have to transcend reason. You have to go beyond your ordinary human intelligence and seek an intelligence based on rapture and ecstasy, an intelligence based on love. And this is the way he writes his poetry. And of course, the Westerners, after the sexual revolution, And after the defeat of sort of religious formalism of in the Christian tradition, they need some sort of tradition that accesses that suppressed feminine erotic dimension. Well, Rumi has that dimension, and he uses this imagery very consciously to convert the person to his point of view.
And also, perhaps another reason would be because it bears the promise of transformation in mm-hmm. oneself, mm-hmm. you know, because in other words, he says it's not that difficult. Other people have done it. I have done it. And you can, through the power of love, even profane love, mm-hmm. you can transform yourself, reawaken the best in yourself.
Yes,
I think that also is very positive.
One of his doctrines is that profane love leads to divine love. He says, "All shiri garzin saras gargun saras, all kabat marabun shahra baras." Whether being a lover is in this place, this world, or from that place, in the end it leads us to the same king, the same divine king. He also, as you say, creates tremendous hope. He is exceedingly positive. He's exceedingly through of enthusiasm. He says, do not go the path of hopelessness. There are hopes. Do not go the way of darkness. There are suns. And his poetry is full of this type of vision.
You may be stone or you may be of marble, but when you meet the heart strong, you are a jewel. Implant the pure one's love within your soul. Keep your heart for love of the sweet-hearted. Don't go down the hopeless track. There is hope. Don't go towards the darkness. There are suns. The heart will lead you to the heart-strong way, the body to the jail of earth and water. Rumi is very popular also because of his relationship with the wandering dervish called Shams Tabriz. It was Shams, which means the sun in Persian, who was Rumi's spiritual guide and who led him to a greater path of love and deeper relationship with the divine. And it was also Shams who inspired him to write poetry. Jalaluddin Rumi refers to Shams as the beloved, and he wrote hundreds of sublime poems to him. It's a meeting of hearts and minds which has fired people's imaginations. It's even the subject of a play by Amrit Kent to be performed in Delhi later this month, called Unveil the Sun.
Open your eyes. What did you see, Jalal?
I saw myself, but not as I am. There are so many selves.
So many fickle impressions, Jalal. You are full with true knowledge. But the knowledge is veiled by your wanting to be this and your wanting to be that. Tear that veil. Turn your eyes to heaven.
Where is the ladder upon which I may climb to heaven?
Love. It is love, Jalal. Love that cannot be caged by words. Love, the rope of God.
In the United States, some members of the gay community have taken this relationship between Jalaluddin Rumi and his mentor Shams to be homosexual. Not surprisingly, it's an interpretation which has caused a great deal of controversy. Andrew Harvey is a Rumi scholar and gay author who doesn't think Rumi was homosexual, but still feels this relationship has been an inspiration to him.
I believe that it was a total love. I believe that it was a love of the heart, a love of the mind, a love of the soul, and a love of the body. I do not know whether this ever was a sexual love. I doubt it. I imagine that a love that complete would not need a overt physical expression, and if it did, then that physical expression would itself be divine. It would be a form of divine communion. These lines go to the core of Rumi and Shams's relationship. This is Rumi talking up to Shams and about Shams. My heart, from your beauty ablaze like the sun, from the curls of your hair, has become ecstatic. Oh, my soul, hand me this brimming cup. Do not weigh pain and misery. Contemplate love. Contemplate friendship. And those two words, love and friendship, have a very deep meaning. Love is the divine passion that flows from the beloved's heart and is flowing from Rumi and Shams's heart like a great fiery stream of passion. And friendship is the noble guardianship of each other's souls that love gives birth to, and the absolute loyalty, the absolute mutual chivalry, the absolute honesty, the absolute sincerity that is born from that love.
Of course, you know, I believe that if one judges people out of their own time in relation to ours, one does them injustice.
Oh,
and
yes,
ourselves injustice as well.
Yes, yes, yes.
In post-Freudian times, everything has to have a payoff, and what's in it for me, body, one can maybe envisage a physical relationship. But bear it in mind that Rumi wasn't 20 and Shams 30. Rumi was 37, which in those days was pretty old. And Shams was in his 60s.
Yes.
And Shams wrote in his maqalat, in his discourses, utterly condemning homosexuality.
Yes.
So there is no question in my mind that there was nothing sexual in
Absolutely.
That relationship. It was entirely, entirely spiritual and entirely based on the disciple.
I completely agree with you, Shushan. I know how high, how ennobling, how extraordinary, and how complete divine love is. As a gay man, the amazing beauty of their relationship is a tremendous inspiration to deepen any relationship that I have, which is either if it's sexual or platonic. This poetry is a universal poetry of love, which gay and straight people can absolutely feast on. But I think it has a special message to gay people because that it took place as a result of the extraordinary fusion between two men in love.
As a mystic and poet who believes in uniting with the divine through love, Rumi has often been romanticized. Andrew Harvey refers to the Rumi constructed by New Age groups as Rosebud Rumi, a Californian hippie-like figure of vague, ecstatic sweetness. I believe Rumi has a tremendous intellectual rigor, even a ferocious austerity, which is in danger of being lost. His concept of love is not New Age, nor is it anywhere close to the ideas of modern love. Yet love is basic to understanding him.
The more I looked at Rumi's teachings, the more I understood what it means to be taken over by love. It's the only thing which transforms life, and it transformed my life.
Gila Hashemi turned to Rumi after she lost her well-paid job in the City of London and had to make do without any of the material comforts she was so used to. She's now a devotee of Rumi, who follows his teaching in a very personal but disciplined way, well aware of the difficulties of following the path of divine love.
Love, this path, is not going to be all straightforward, all love, happiness and all. It's going to have lots of tribulations coming forward in all Rumi's teachings and other Persian poets. You live in the world, but you don't become part of it. And to some it may seem cold, but the real love, it's not sentimental. It's consistent. The only separation from God takes place, this is what I've come to understand, is when I become involved with emotions. And Rumi talks about this, which I will read. If you could get rid of yourself just once, the secret of secrets would open to you. The face of the unknown hidden beyond the universe would appear on the mirror of your perception. So basically what he's saying, that if you could let go of all these emotional aspects within yourself, if you could detach yourself from all these things, you could get to see what is real. And when you are in the presence of God, when you are above all these elements, there's something which is quite wonderful about the objective reality of love. There is a humility, there is a sense of uniting with all people, irrespective of their geographical situation or religious purpose. It is an element from within, which is a wonderful feeling. And Rumi talks about it is in silence we understand all things, not in speeches, not in words, not in attachments.
What is unusual is that Gila follows Rumi entirely on her own, in a one-to-one relationship, unlike his more traditional devotees who formed groups and fraternities. I've often watched the performances of the whirling dervishes from Rumi's order, the Mevlana. Round and round they whirl in perfect harmony, like butterflies in formation, with their skirts flaring out as if buffeted by a breeze. But what is most striking is the way the whole ceremony revolves around the sheikh or master who guides them, as if they are planets orbiting the sun. And certainly the sheikh plays a very important role in teaching Rumi to his disciples. By contrast, Gila felt she needed to approach Rumi independently.
I have no attachments to groups, and because I find that there is a prescription to follow. With Rumi, Shams transformed his life. Before that, he was very much part of the orthodox way of living, in the same way as I was brought up. But his life changed through Shams. And the same way, where I was following the rituals, the whole of these rituals were put aside when, let's say, love took over, that it was no longer, as Rumi says, love was not contained in buildings and so on, whether it is a mosque, whether it's a church or another place of worship, it was within. What I was looking for was within. When people ask me, are you a Muslim? Are you a Christian? Are you a Jew? And my answer is very simple. I believe in God. That is all I can say about my faith. I cannot say I am this or that, but I can say I believe in God.
Come to me, wanderers, worshippers, whoever you are, a Muslim or a Jew, a Christian, a fire worshipper, or an atheist. Come to me. There have been some very free translations of Rumi's work, and this has brought him enormous popularity in the West. Others fear his poetry is going to be diluted and lose its real meaning. But I believe Rumi has become popular because people have a need for a spirituality, for something that transcends themselves. But perhaps the last word should go to Rumi's 22nd descendant, Esim Çelebi Osman. She was visiting a newly restored house for Rumi's followers in Istanbul.
Hazreti Mevlana Celaleddin Rumi, bildiğiniz gibi bütün dünyada manevi bir ışık saçıyor. Bugün
Rumi sends a spiritual light all around the world. In all corners of the world, there are people who receive his thoughts and apply it. I follow him too, and I gain happiness and serenity through his work. And at the same time, I also feel special because he's my great-grandfather. I feel a bit spoiled by that. Every word, every sentence he has said is very important for today. I think, for men, the most important thing today is finding what he's looking for. Everyone is in search of something. And Rumi has four lines where he gives us the formula. I like this piece of Rumi the most nowadays because it is very relevant to our times. Let me read it to you.
Bir can var canında, o canı...
There is a life force in your daily life. Search for that life force. Search for that hidden gem in the earthly mountain that is your body. Oh friend, search for it with all your might. Search for what you're looking for within your heart.
Aradığını dışarıda değil, kendi içinde ara.
Heart and Soul was presented by Shusha Guppy and produced by Anne Kazam. You can hear the program again by going to the BBC World Service website.